This is episode 404, dated Monday, August 18th, 2025.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hi, everybody. Welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. I am Bob Branko. Glad to be here today with everybody. This is episode 404, dated Monday, August 18th, 2025. Before we continue, allow me to introduce who we have so far on the panel. We start out with Reverend Michael Garrett.
Welcome, everybody. From a sweltering 98 degrees, Missouri City, Texas. Good to be here today.
We are fall-like today. The temperature barely got above 70. It's very, very dry and breezy. Winds out of the north. It does feel like fall, and temperatures may go down into the 40s in some parts of southern New England tonight. Don Wardlow.
Hi there. It's cooler here in Jersey than it has been. Finally today, I'm able to go without the air conditioning for at least the first time in a week.
Peter Alchul and Luther King are expected to be here. I know that Mitch Pomerantz will not be here today. He is on a cruise in Alaska. I hope you're having a great time, Mitch. So let me take this opportunity to thank those people who make it possible for Sports Roundtable to be available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. Our media sources, thank you so much. We appreciate what you do as well. And, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, thank you for archiving our shows on my website. For those of you who want to find the archived episodes of Sports Roundtable, just go to www.brankoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to Sports Roundtable Podcast. Click on them, and you will see most of our archives from latest to earliest. And I want to say, merci, Jackie. I got to keep up that tradition, Peter. I want to thank Trish for being our facilitator for today's program and also Brad, our streamer. And because we are being streamed, let me give out my email address. It is bobbranko93@gmail.com. That's bobbranko93@gmail.com. We want to hear from our listeners about what we talk about on this program. I want to welcome a brand new listener. I hope he's listening. I hope he's on the call today. If not, I'm sure he will listen to the program once it's released. And I'm talking about Joe Candela. Thank you, Joe, for agreeing to be a part of our Sports Roundtable family. Welcome aboard, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Reverend Mike, you brought up something before we started, and I think we're on the same page here because I did want to talk NFL today. We haven't touched much on it lately, and of course, preseason started about 2 weeks ago. You brought up the Cleveland Browns, so we can start there and kick some things around. You said that they have four quarterbacks right now, Pickett,
yes,
Sanders, and who are the other two?
Dylan Gabriel and Joe Flacco.
Oh, Flacco. There you go. There's your third guy. I think Dylan Gabriel is the odd man out. They will likely carry Flacco because he's a veteran and so Pickett.
They just announced that he's going to start. He's going to be the week one starter. In fact, I guess he's going to play a little bit this weekend just to get some reps. But they announced that he's going to be the week one starter. So all of the young guys can fight it out. One of the things the article I read pointed out was that they all have soft tissue injuries, and Flacco is the only one at 40 who doesn't have an injury. So the rest of them, Sanders has an oblique injury, and I think Pickett has a hamstring problem. And I can't remember exactly which one Gabriel has. I think it's another muscle pull or something like that. So they all are suffering from soft tissue injuries. These are the younger guys, you know, and Flacco at 40 is in good health.
I'm sure they were counting on Pickett to charge down the field.
Yes.
Are any of these quarterbacks on IL? Maybe that's why they might carry all four, if that's the case. No?
No, they're not on IL. They're just, you know, I guess they consider these nicks and bruises temporary absences from the practice and the game. In fact, I think they said that they were actually throwing the ball around, but they're not in shape to get out on the field, especially with hamstring pulls and muscle pulls and stuff like that.
Well, I'm going to say something positive about my Patriots, and I know it's exhibition season. I know people who can't wait to tell me that once I stop bragging about their 2-0 preseason record. But, you know, everybody plays preseason, not just the Patriots. So it's all relative, I think, in that regard, too. And the fact that the Patriots are 2-0 in preseason means a lot to me as a fan, because it means they're getting their act together. And I think they're going to have a better season this year. As a matter of fact, I'm going to predict on this show right now that they are going to be 9-8. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to talk about playoffs, but I'm going to say 9-8 for the Pats this year.
That's pretty well. Now here's my comment to that, in that it's very interesting. Preseason is my scrubs against your scrubs. But it's interesting to me that the Buffalo, who's the odds-on favorite in that division, lost 38-0 over the weekend.
Did Allen play?
I don't know. But a lot of the teams, even the teams that you think would be pretty poor, are scoring points. But if the depth on Buffalo's team is that poor that they couldn't even score any points, I wonder what that means. I wonder what that says about the starters.
Who beat Buffalo that day? Do you recall? I'm trying to think.
I don't recall at this moment. But just looking at the score was that was a surprise.
Do you anticipate anything different about this football season as far as teams? Are there going to be any teams that are going to perform better than we expect, or maybe underachieve, or, you know, I know some teams are very predictable. Like, I think Kansas City will have a good year this year. I think that Detroit will have a good year. They may not win their division, but I think they're still strong. I think Philly's going to be excellent.
Oh, I know who beat Buffalo. It was Chicago.
They're going to be a good team too. That whole division, even Green Bay,
Minnesota. Yeah, that division is going to be pretty tough. The question mark, and that's what we asked Troy last week. The question mark in that division is Minnesota. But I'm not sure. I'm really not sure that Detroit is going to be as dominant as they were last year. They had a lot of changes there. They lost both of their coordinators, their offensive and defensive coordinator. They've got a lot of guys coming back from injury. So it's going to be interesting to see how they all fit together. Green Bay, you know, is probably one of my least favorite teams because, you know, the history between Green Bay and Dallas. But they've got a great receiving core. They've got a good running game. The question with them will be their defense, and it has been pretty solid. So they may make some noise in that division, and perhaps Chicago is going to be more competitive. So that could be a very interesting division. And I'll tell you who might be a surprise in the whole NFL to me. Is the New York Giants.
The Giants, they may not be in the top two in their division. I think the Commanders are better. It's hard to say, but you're right. The Giants have an upside right now.
Yeah. Right now, it hurts me to say it, but it looks like the Cowboys are going to be finished last in the division.
Well, I'm going to make a prediction. Well, in the AFC, Buffalo and Kansas City are pretty much shoo-ins, in my opinion. The North, I think, is up in the air. I can't pick anybody from the North yet, but I'm going to say from the South, Houston.
In the AFC South, well, it's kind of hard to say, but Houston has potential. The problem Houston has is kind of like the Cleveland quarterback situation. Their running backs are injured. If their running backs are healthy, Houston could make some noise. They've got a great receiving core. It depends on the offensive line, whether C.J. Stroud can have time to throw the ball. I think Nico Collins and Christian Kirk are going to make a great duo for them, and they've got a few guys behind them that will really cinch that receiving core. So they could make some noise. I think, yeah, you probably are right, you know, when you look at Tennessee, Indianapolis, and Jacksonville. But
NFC, go ahead.
In the NFC? Oh,
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. Yeah. And one of the interesting trades was Houston sent one of their wide receivers to Philadelphia for a tight end because they're injury prone here. They're nicked up with the tight end, so they needed a body. So they sent John Mechie III to Philly, and so that's only going to make their receiving core stronger. So
I'm going to go with San Francisco out west. I think the North is up in the air, and I think the South is up in the air, at least for now.
Well, now, you think San Francisco can outdo the Rams?
I think the Rams need to prove a little bit more. I'm not saying it's out of the realm of possibility, because it's not. The Rams, I think, have to prove that they can do it, and I think they can, actually. It's almost like in baseball with the Dodgers and Padres. I know Mitch's ears are probably ringing when I say this. But I still say when all is said and done in baseball, San Diego's going to win that division over the Dodgers.
Well, you know, it's hard to say.
Well, that's not the way San Diego showed it this past weekend. They went into L.A. and they just got whooped. 3 straight, and particularly the Saturday game, 6-0. They were shut out by either Blake Snell or Tyler Glasnow, one or the other.
Well, that's one thing about the Dodgers right now. They're getting all of their starters back healthy. Snell's back, Glasnow's back. Of course, you got Yamamoto. Was Sasaki back yet? He's supposed to be, right?
Not yet, no. And I'll tell you who's got bad trouble, and that's the Phillies. They
lost Wheeler.
This only happened about an hour before we took to the air on Monday, the 18th of August. Zach Wheeler had to have a procedure to remove a blood clot from his right shoulder. This is very similar to what happened to David Cohn of the Yankees in 1996. And when that happened, Cohn couldn't pitch for 4 months. Now, I don't know whether Wheeler can get well sooner than that. I don't know. But it would be a very big risk if they tried to rush him back onto the field, which sports medicine people, unfortunately, are known for that. You know, trying to rush a man back sooner than he might be ready. And especially with something like a blood clot, that can be so tricky. In all likelihood, he's going to be put on blood thinners, as I was. I had 2 blood clots in 2015. I was very, very lucky. I didn't have to have an operation to remove them, but I was put on blood thinners and will be on them for the rest of my days. And that's probably the story for Zach Wheeler, I'd be very surprised if I heard he was not put on blood thinners from now on.
I wouldn't rush him back. In fact, Philadelphia has a very intelligent GM named Dave Dombrowski, and I trust him implicitly. So I really think that they're better off protecting Wheeler and not rushing him back at all.
Well, he's got to be careful if that's the case. He's really got to be careful playing. But who do you think is going to win that division?
Well, depending on their depth, it could still be the Phillies. I don't see the Mets, you know, getting their act back together. They peaked way too early, and then they collapsed, which is also what happened to my beloved Yankees. So if Philly has the pitching depth, and of course, that's a question for everybody, but if they can manage without Wheeler, then they could still, you know, win the East. I don't know if they run into serious problems that might allow the Mets to get back into the picture. Because I think it's a two-horse race in that division.
I agree with you.
Well, finally, Milwaukee finally lost a game.
They did after winning 14 in a row. That was beautiful. And game 14 in particular was fantastic. I was listening to that, and there were 39,000 in Cincinnati that night. And that's unthinkable in Cincinnati. They just don't get crowds like that. But they came in, and that Saturday night, that was extra innings. It was 2-2, then it was 3-3. And then Milwaukee got a 3-run home run in the top of the 11th, and then Cincinnati put up 2 to make it 6-5, but Milwaukee held it together. That's how they won game number 14, and game number 15 was also extra innings, and that's the one that they lost yesterday afternoon, Sunday afternoon. They lost, they did not score in the top half of inning number 10. And against Grant Anderson, their pitcher, Cincinnati put up the game-winning run, and that ended the streak. Although the Brewers got back in gear, they were ahead 7-0 on the Cubs as of when we took the air, and the game was very nearly over.
Yeah, I was going to say the last I saw, they were up 3-0, so they must have scored some additional runs.
They definitely did.
Yeah.
So, and then they have a later game tonight, Monday night, the 18th, is a split doubleheader for the Brewers at Wrigley Field. And then presumably they have games Tuesday and Wednesday on the north side. And that's a duel of the two top teams in the NL Central.
Well, there's going to be a huge series this weekend, a 4-gamer between my Sox and your Yankees, Don. This is going to be fun.
Yes, where's it going to be, do you know?
I think it's going to be here at Fenway, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, well, you know I'll be listening to that. I'll be paying good and close attention to see whether my Yankees can get it done. They swept the Cardinals, but what does that mean? Our Cardinals fan isn't here to tell us whether that means anything, but because the Cardinals haven't been doing all that great. Again, the NL Central is a two-horse race between the Brewers and the Cubs, and then you have the Cardinals and the Reds and the Pirates all going basically nowhere.
The Cardinals are, what, 61-63 or something like that. They're just, you know, treading water, and there are a lot of teams with those kind of records. But Milwaukee is so far ahead. 78, 79 wins.
So, yeah, there's nothing like a 14-game winning streak, which is a team record, by the way. Their record before that had been 13 in 1987, but they broke that record. The record. They broke the record on Saturday night, two nights ago.
I'm wondering if they peaked too early like the Mets did.
Good question. We'll only find out over the next, you know, a couple of months before we get into postseason.
September 1 to me is like, you know, here's the stretch run. know, here you are. So, I wonder if the Astros can hang in there. You know, they lost last night. They scored the two out of the three game. Well, they lost two out of three, and then both of the losses, they scored only one run. You know, they lost 14-1 Friday, 12-0 yesterday. And so you wonder, even though they're supposed to be getting some guys back, you wonder if they're going to be able to hang on to the lead.
Who were they playing when they got beat like that?
Baltimore. And I didn't think Baltimore was that good, but Astros pitching pitch well at some point, and then you get these stretches like they're doing now, where they're giving up a lot of runs, and you know, the bullpen is not as tight as it used to be.
Houston got a blow there. They lost Josh Hader for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But they're still, I think, in first place. The Mariners are trying to catch them, though. And the Mariners...
Yeah, it's only a game and a half. You know, fortunately, the Mariners lost last night also. So
two out of three to the Mets, including one game where a guy named Nolan McLean, a guy the Mets drafted in 2023 from Oklahoma State, he made his MLB debut on Saturday night, and he went 6+, and he went 5 1/3, actually, my mistake, and he got the win. The Mets were ahead by enough, and when he left, you know, they hung on to the lead. They won that game. That was 3-1. They beat Brian Wu, the all-star of the Mariners, and then the Mets beat the Mariners again in the Williamsport game. I think that was a 7-3 final score last night.
And, of course, in the American League right now, you've got Toronto, who's playing out of their minds. I'm not sure how long that's going to last. You know, they're in first place, and, of course, Detroit's in first. I think they will take that division. And then, of course, it's between Houston and Seattle, although I still maintain Seattle may pass Houston because they have, I think, better starting pitching right now than Houston, although Houston's pretty good. I like Hunter Brown and Valdez, but I just think that Seattle with Kirby and Gilbert, Wu, and Castillo, I might be forgetting somebody. I think ultimately they're going to take that division. Houston will be hunting for the wild card spot.
Yeah, I hope they can win enough games to at least get the wild card, and maybe some of the pitchers will come back. Maybe we can get Alvarez back. He's supposed to start in Corpus. He's supposed to go down and do some work in Corpus. I don't know what the significance of that is, because I would have thought he would have done some of his work here with the Space Cowboys, but they want him to go down to AA and get some batting in.
Well, that's interesting. But our Red Sox, right now they are the second wild card. They're right behind Seattle and slightly ahead of the Yankees. Now, Don, I have a question especially for you. Michael, you may know too. Now, why is it that the first round of the playoffs, every game, is in the home stadium of the team with home field? Why don't they travel?
I guess it was somebody's idea that they should have home field advantage, but I would say for the game that matters the most, that's when they should have the home field advantage, the potentially last game of the series.
Well, isn't it based on the win-loss record?
As far as I know, yes.
Yeah. So that would determine. that'd give you home field advantage if you've got more wins.
Well, like for example, if the season ended today, the Yankees would be the road team, and they won't play any home games in round one, the wild card round.
Well, I'm surprised they would even be a road team as badly as they've been playing. the talk last week was that they might not even make the playoffs at all.
Well, that would mean a team like Cleveland or Texas or a team like that would have to pass them.
Of course, I don't want to see that happen, but that's what the pundits were saying in the Athletic and sports newsletters like that one last week. Now, they may help themselves out by beating the Cardinals and sweeping them. Maybe that'll begin to get them some more momentum. I don't know who they play before they go in to play the Red Sox starting on Thursday.
There are a lot of teams, aren't there, Don, in that 61, 62, 63 win range. So that means that the playoffs are it's hard to pick them right now. Who might make those last few playoff slots?
But absolutely. That's why I have such a problem with the hockey style baseball playoffs. You know, I'm so used to, at the most, 8 teams being involved. I liked it better, of course, when it was 4. But, you know, they're going to insist on making money, you know, and we're going to have, you know, World Series games on Thanksgiving if somebody's not careful.
Don, the Yankees play the Rays.
Okay.
For 2 games, tomorrow and Wednesday.
All right, they'll play them at George M. Steinbrenner Field.
So,
I don't know what Tampa Bay is going to do, how long they're going to stay playing in that minor league field that actually belongs to the Yankees, because you try and build another stadium, and the question is another hurricane going to come through and do exactly the same thing that Hurricane Milton did last year and wiped out the old Tropicana Field?
Well, how long was Tropicana Field existing? I mean, you had that risk every year that Tampa Bay played.
It was built in 1990.
All right, so 30 plus years they were wondering about hurricanes, and finally Milton happened, and that was it. But that was a chance that they took for 30 plus years.
They built it at that for stadium. Other purposes before there was a Tampa Bay Rays team. There was talk about the Giants moving to Tampa Bay as early as 1993, and the building had been called the Sun Dome originally before it became Tropicana Field. And, you know, there was, you know, boxing in there, and there were other things in there. And then, as I say, the talk was, would the Giants move in there in 1993 before Bob Lurie came in and saved baseball in San Francisco?
Hey, we've got background noise there.
I don't know what that is.
I'll do something about that. Sorry about
that. It's gone now. That's all right. But, you know, it's one of those things. I think there are a lot of things about baseball that need to be fixed. I think the umpiring needs to be fixed. We've kicked that around many times on this program, and I still maintain that umpiring is a huge problem. There are a lot of missed calls. I don't know what they're teaching these umpires nowadays. Why is it that they're under so much scrutiny by the broadcasters and by some fans? I mean, I'm not there, so I don't know. I just know what I hear. But it doesn't sound too good.
Well, did Luther send that article out? I read somewhere, you know, the lady who umpired last week, made her debut. And she did as well as many of the, you know, professional, the old guys that have been around. But their standard seems to have dropped, and like to 90, 91, 92, 93% accuracy. That seems to be standard. That seems to be okay. You know,
I don't think 92. That's acceptable. I mean, if it were acceptable, they wouldn't be talking about this challenge system.
Well, but what I'm saying, it seems to be acceptable to the league.
Well, you're talking about 93%. You're talking about 7 missed calls out of every 100. That doesn't sound too terrible. It just depends when those 7 missed calls are. Are they?
Well, that's the point. I mean, if you know, you got the bases loaded, nobody out, a sac fly could get somebody in, and you call a third strike on a ball that's low and outside. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's a bad time to have one of your 7 misses.
Right, right.
But yeah, Luther did send that out to those of us who get messages from him, and that did say that Jen Paul had done as well as the men umpires are doing.
Now, is Jen Paul going to continue in her role, or did she just do it for that one series?
I'm not sure. I hope she does. I haven't heard if she's going to continue or not.
Because maybe this will be a trend. If she starts umpiring regularly, you may see more female umpires join the major leagues.
I hope so. It only took, 149 years?
That's all.
So, yes, let's see that continue.
And I guess according to that article, I guess there are a few others, moving around the minor leagues.
Women?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. Maybe you will see some more, like I said. But
I'd like to hear some more broadcasters. Like there was one, Kristen Carbach with the Phillies a few years ago, made the minors, but never did make it to the bigs. The Mariners have a lady named Shannon Dreyer who does pre and post, but does not do play-by-play. I would love to hear her do play-by-play. Absolutely, she is solid on pre and post. So I'd like to see what she can do if she took it to the next level.
Well, recently on the New England Sports Network, which we all know of as NESN, they had a women's night, and they had 2 female announcers broadcast the entire game. I forgot their names right now.
I wish I could have heard that. That would have been cool.
One of them, I think,'s name was Jennifer something. I forgot what the other one's name is, but I'm sure we can look that up. It was in honor of women's night. All the other broadcasters took a back seat. Dave O'Brien, Lou Maloney, they took the day off in favor of the women that night.
And you know, the Orioles have Melanie Newman. The
yes.
Marlins have, her last name is Sacco, Kelly Sacco. They have her occasionally, not often enough, cause she's good. So they may have her on TV, which I don't know, cause I can't afford to pay for it. But.
And we mustn't forget Susan Walden.
Oh yeah, well, it's time to start to forget Susan Waldman.
Really?
She's really starting to make pivotal mistakes and really show, you know, the miles. And I hate to say that because in the 1980s, I waited eagerly to hear her do the updates on a brand new radio station, WFAN, but 1987 was a long time ago.
I would like to turn it over to any participants who want to step in and talk to me and Michael and Dawn here on Sports Roundtable. So let me see if we can encourage people to raise their hands and chime in on, and you can talk about whatever sport you want to talk about. I know we've touched on the NFL. And the NBA, we could talk about college football, women's sports. We could talk about whatever you want. So, Trish, do we have any hands raised at this particular time?
I do not see any at this moment.
Well, let us know when that changes, and we'll be glad to talk to someone.
Okay.
Anything new on the women's front, Don, especially with Caitlin? Anything new there? Don?
He's muted.
Okay, you caught me when I was going over to
there you go. So
in the room.
But, do you have any updates for us on the women's situation?
It doesn't look good. The latest thing I heard about Caitlin was that she might be out for the rest of the season. Now I don't know how long the rest of the WNBA season is. I know it started almost immediately after the college basketball season. So I don't know when that wraps up. So the expression out to the season means one thing in May or June and could well mean something else now.
I think they're getting ready to wrap it up. They should be getting close to their championship in September sometime.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of talk around, you know, that there seems to be a, I don't know, something against Caitlin Clark. And I hear from a lot of people who watch the game, pay attention, and they watch her. And, so there's sort of mixed comments that come out about her, and the WNBA, women, they seem to have it out for her. You know, so I don't know.
A lot of talk between the players and the refs. The word is that she's not getting treated well, and now she hasn't played a game since July 15th, and with the season wrapping up, she apparently won't be able to play until next season, next April, May, you know, whenever that is.
So, you think
it's jealousy?
That's a big part of it, because she does get a lot of publicity, and more than a lot of the others, more than Candace Parker ever got. You know, not that that ever bothered me, because I was never a Candace Parker fan because she played for Tennessee. But she doesn't get the publicity that Brittany Griner gets, except when Brittany, you know, or Brittany doesn't get the pub that Caitlin Clark gets, except when Brittany Griner got thrown in jail. Now that was the kind of publicity for her that I liked, but she eventually did get out of there and actually returned to play basketball again.
Of course, she's not as good as she used to be.
Well, none of us are. She's not as young.
Well, true, but I think that jail stint took something out of her.
Probably so. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
The younger women players are showing their talent now. So it's a different game too, because they've always been physical, but the women play some very physical basketball, even just like the guys do sometimes.
Definitely. And somebody like Kara Walters, who was the cream of the crop in the '90s for the UConn Huskies, someone with her skill set would get nowhere in today's women's basketball game because of 30 years of evolution.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's not a powder puff game, so.
Hardly.
They play real hard-nosed basketball.
They sure do. Well, we're still waiting for participants. We've talked about baseball, we've talked about women's basketball, we've talked about football, but talk about whatever you want to talk about. Not much going on in the NBA right now.
No. Until we get some hands raised, let's flip over to college football.
All right, let's go for it. Any thoughts on that right now? They're starting up in another week or so, for real.
Actually, I think there's somebody's going to play this weekend, but the big game out of the chute will be my Texas Longhorns against the Ohio State Buckeyes, the national champion, the defending national championship winners, and it's kind of like for Texas, everybody's putting a lot of pressure. I think it's pressure. I hope he doesn't feel this pressure, but I think they're putting a lot of pressure on Arch Manning. You know, they've already.
And that's Archie's grandson, is it?
Yes.
That's Archie's grandson.
Holy cow.
And why do they put that?
Hi, Luther.
Hey, guys. And, Mike, and by the way, why do they put that kickoff at 11 a.m. on Big Fox? Couldn't they have put that later in the day?
Yeah, it would have been a good idea, but it didn't happen.
It should have been.
No. I don't know it didn't.
What the weather's going to be like.
That's true, too.
At noon.
11 Central.
Columbus.
I'm actually looking forward to the game over at Dublin this week. Of the Big 12 opener with K-State and Iowa State.
In Dublin, Ireland?
Yes, sir.
You gotta be kidding me.
Huh?
No.
College football's reaching out overseas too.
11. They've done it for the, what, 5 out of the last 6, maybe 6 out of the last 7, they've had 2 teams go across the pond to play in Dublin.
Really?
Yep.
I know women's college basketball has gone to Paris.
They've done Paris. They've done the Virgin Islands.
Yeah.
They've done the Virgin Islands. They've done Hawaii.
Right. Yes, they have. They've been doing Hawaii since the early 90s. But
I think they did
relatively new.
Yeah. I don't remember the Paris
tournament. There's a big tournament in Hawaii.
Yeah. The Diamond Head. Yeah. I know that. They used to have, what was that other tournament that they used to have? I know the Diamond Head was one of them, and then they had the, there was another one, but that's during Christmas.
There were 2 Rainbow Classics, one for men and one for women.
Yeah. Yeah. Then there was a Rainbow.
Right.
I think that one is on Thanksgiving.
That was on the Big Island, and the Diamond Head was someplace else, I think.
Yeah. I think it was like maybe, what is it? Oh man, I can't remember what it was now.
And then, of course, both the guys and the girls had the Great Alaska.
The dearly departed Great Alaskan Shootout, where you couldn't go by land; you had to go by boat.
Yeah,
because there was no way where you could drive a car. You literally had to get to the part of Alaska by way of a boat.
And you notice that there are several NFL games.
Oh yeah, in Germany, Brazil, yeah, Stadium of the Corinthians right off the bat. Chargers and Chiefs at the Stadium of the Corinthians. Yes, they named the stadium in Brazil after the Bible.
Is that preseason or is that
regular? No, that's regular season.
Regular season
game 1 on a Friday.
How do you like that?
This is the second year in a row they've done that, because last year the first one was Packers and Eagles. Last year at the Stadium of the Corinthians. Hmm. This year they're doing it with Chiefs Chargers. And I think they got one in Brazil. I think they've got one, a couple of games in London. And I think they've even got one in Dublin this year. And I think that's Browns and Steelers and Vikings. I think at Dublin, I think like week 4, 5. So yeah, they're world traveling.
So those games start at 9 o'clock.
9:30. Eastern, 8:30 Central.
Still early,
but hey, they'll be done before noon.
People on the West Coast have to get
that's
up.
That's a 6 a.m. start, 6:30. Yeah. Look,
that's nice.
Hey, that brings a whole new meaning to breakfast. It's called breakfast of champions.
It's like when they go to Japan, at the beginning of the baseball season.
Oh God.
Was it 4 o'clock in the morning?
Try 5. 5:10 Central Time.
Yep.
6:10 your time.
Which would be 2 o'clock a.m.
No, three.
L.A.
What was it?
3 o'clock, that's right.
Cubs Dodgers, not that long ago when they opened up the season.
You know.
Tuesday and Wednesday morning at the same time while everybody else is still playing spring games. I'm like, that's nuts.
Yeah, because everybody else already. Mitch had to wake up
at 3 in the morning.
Early in the morning, so.
3:10. I remember, what was it? Thank goodness the Cardinals at least played when they went over to London to play the Cubs in that 2-game miniseries. They were playing at 12 in the afternoon.
Relatively small time difference.
Yeah, what was that series that they played in? What was it? Mexico City, Red Sox, Yankees, they played one year somewhere?
Mexico City was the Giants and
Giants
and
the Padres.
And John Miller did one game solo, and the final was like 16-11. So,
wow.
he had a busy day that day.
And probably had no room on his scorecard.
Oh yeah.
His scorecard is probably a mess.
And it would be even worse if it was a Braille scorecard, because I've done a couple of those games in my minor league days.
I think I heard a couple of the blind, play by color analysts for the Rays and the Dodgers. I think the Braille card was probably a mess.
Yeah, the Rays have one. They have Enrique Olu. He does.
Yeah. Enrique Olu.
Broadcast.
Yes.
Yeah. I've met him. I've not met him,
but
he's
I've heard
not
him.
Listening.
I've heard of him, but I haven't met him.
He's been a guest.
Really good guy.
He is, absolutely.
Lots of fun to be with.
He was born in Nicaragua, but he had to go to Costa Rica to begin his education. At the time when he was born, there was no school for the blind in Nicaragua.
But so the Cardinals don't have a blind broadcaster, but they do have the Spanish broadcast team of Paulo Asensio and Benji Molina.
Okay, Benji
on WJIR in St. Louis.
Yes, I know about that station. Yeah. I know Benji used to play.
Basically. Yeah, he's a part of the Espanol broadcast team, and I think if I'm not mistaken, they just come straight on at first pitch. They don't have a play-by-play segment. They just come straight on right at first pitch, I think.
Now, Don, who is Enrique's partner?
I honestly don't remember.
I've forgotten, but I don't know who his partner is, but I know he works with a guy.
They've been partners for a good 10 or 15 years, mm-hmm. but I don't remember what the guy's name.
I can probably look up the Rays Spanish broadcast team. You can probably look it up on your, I could probably look it up on my iPad. But.
And interestingly enough, when he's not doing, color commentary for the Rays.
Oh, the Rays baseball broadcast.
He works in the public defender's office.
Really?
That's an interesting sideline.
No kidding. Now I wonder though. They only had the Rays doing their home. They only had them doing the home. Cause I remember at one point when they were starting to do the Spanish broadcasts for a lot of these MLB teams, they would only had their Spanish teams do the home games. I think they've started to expand out a little bit to let them do a few more of the road games.
Yeah. Some of that is happening now. The Rays for the longest time didn't have him travel. And as a matter of fact, when the Rays went to Cuba, I really hoped Enrique would be allowed to go there
travel.
To give us a blind person's perspective of a trip mm-hmm. to Cuba, but that or was
they didn't allow
not
that
allowed.
Happen.
Nope. Mm,
that sucks.
So they had to recreate that game from a studio in Tampa.
Which the Dodgers had to do, and I think the Cubs had to do it too, I think. I don't think any of the broadcast teams, I think the Cubs had theirs at their home ballpark and their home radio booth.
Yeah, at Wrigley at 3 a.m. or 2 a.m.
It was wow. 5 a.m.
Frightening, man. I wouldn't want to do that.
And I think you told me the Dodgers broadcast team, I think you told me they did theirs in a studio or something like that.
Yes, they did. They did not send them over to Japan.
Which is surprising.
For the usual excuse, financial reasons.
Yeah.
Which is pathetic.
I was thankful when the Cardinals went to Mexico City and London that their broadcast team went.
I would hope so. I mean, that's this.
I was thankful that Rooney and Horton and Klaibs went.
That's something they really should do.
That should be mandatory.
Luther, before you came on, we were kicking around a couple of things about teams that had some very bad news recently. The Astros and the Phillies. The Phillies lost Zach Wheeler for probably the rest of the season. Don
alerted me to that one on, what was it, Saturday?
Yes. It was, but they didn't know then if he would have to have a procedure.
No.
Now, today, this morning, the procedure was done.
And I got the message from you about 3:20.
Yeah.
Saying that they had got it done. And I'm like, oh boy.
They had hoped they could get away. Like in my case, they didn't operate. I don't know what they did, but because I was pretty hazy, you know, for a couple of days there, but they did not operate.
The only saving grace for the Phillies, they got Aaron Nola back. So they're going to really need him and Ranger Suarez and their other pitcher, Christopher
Sanchez.
Sanchez.
Yeah.
They're going to need him. I think from what I heard from their manager's show on Saturday, that they're going to start doing a 6-man rotation for the time being. But with Wheeler being down, they're going to need those three to really carry the Phillies.
And in Houston, they lost Josh Hader, I think, for the rest of the season, which is a big blow.
Which is their closer. Yeah. And I don't know if the Mariners won that game last night because I didn't get a chance. I was listening to Flu Season.
The Mariners stay
a game and a half, and their road doesn't get any easier. They stay in Pennsylvania, but they go to Philly for three, starting tonight at 5:45.
I wouldn't miss that one.
And I don't know what the pitching matchup is on that one, but I do know the Astros are, I mean, I think everybody, I don't think anybody's getting a night off tonight, I don't think. I think everybody's playing, I think.
And you got some big boppers on the Mariners. You got Cal Raleigh.
Yeah, Raleigh.
Gino Suarez.
Yeah.
Dinky ballpark in Philadelphia.
Oh.
Which is very similar to the one in
Great
Cincinnati.
American Bandbox.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of the Citizens Bank ballpark, should it be called the Citizens Bank launching pad?
You're talking about Cal Raleigh. He's setting a lot of records.
Yeah.
Exactly. But here's the thing, though.
What's he got? 45?
He's got 45, and Aaron Judge, I think, is right behind him with 39 because he hit a bomb on Saturday, which knocked Victor Scott out for the rest of the series. I mean, he hit a bomb. I mean, he hit a drive, which Scott almost caught up against the right center field wall. But he fell down wrong on his leg, and now he's out for a while.
Now Salvi has the record for the most home runs by a catcher, right?
I think so. Actually, now that I think about it, because I think I was listening to the White Sox broadcast, and somebody, I think it was either Lynn Casper or Darren Jackson, was asking about Salvi Perez. You know, would he be a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
And then as soon as the words got out of his mouth, he gawked one off the White Sox pitcher. And I had the White Sox feed on, and they were still talking about Salvador Perez with the Royals. He's basically been with the Royals his whole career.
Yes, he has. One of those rarities who does that.
And I wonder, when his career is over, will he get that opportunity to be, you know,
I believe, for
a Hall of Fame discussion? I think he will too.
And you know, until you mentioned him, I would have thought it was Johnny Bench. Who has a home run record for catch?
I thought somebody broke a Johnny Bench record, I'm not mistaken.
He did that before.
Yeah, he
before
did.
Before the All-Star break.
There was a year when Salvi won, had over 50, I thought.
I thought it was 40. I thought it was over 40. But he may have had 50. I don't remember. But I know Salvi 1 year was pretty good.
Oh yeah. I'm going to check it later. Don, I might believe it was 48.
Go ahead, Michael.
Don, Aaron Judge was on a tear,
before he got hurt.
So what's going on with him now?
Well, he's back as Luther described. He hit that home run that put Victor Scott on the injured list.
Yep.
And
it was his leg of some kind. I don't remember exactly, but Ben Rice, let me tell you, Ben Rice went nuts on Saturday night.
Yeah, three.
I'm like, whoever this kid was, I'm like, thank God they signed him. He had 7 RBIs on Saturday night.
Yes, he did.
I'm like, good Lord. I'm like, where did this kid come from? Huh. I'm like, geez.
Yeah, he and Austin Wells are our
catchers. Yeah, they went bonkers.
And really, what Rice does, you know, the majority of the catching.
Yeah, but Austin Wells, I think, caught 2 of the 3 games. I think he caught Friday with Louise Heald and Sunday. I think Rice played first all weekend, if I'm not mistaken, because I think Wells caught Max Fried oh, Saturday night.
I bet the Yankees are sorry they gave up 2 great catchers, Narvaez, who's now with the Red Sox, and Augustine Ramirez, which is
with the Marlins.
Catcher for the Marlins.
Yeah, you
well,
know.
But, you know.
Here's the thing. The Yankees are still in contention for both the wild card and the division. I think they picked up a game on the Red Sox. I think they came into the weekend like a game behind them.
They're at half a game behind the Red Sox right now, I believe.
Well, something like that. But I know the Yankees had the day off. The Red Sox play tonight, I think.
They do. Orioles.
Yeah, and the Orioles, even though they traded a lot of their guys, they've been playing very pesky baseball lately. They have been playing very pesky baseball.
We were just talking about that. They beat up on the Astros.
Sure. Yeah. They shut them out yesterday 12-0. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. About 14 on Friday night.
Sheesh.
I maintain Seattle's going to win the West. Detroit's going to win the Central. And the East, well,
the East is up in the East is still up in the air because I think the Red Sox, Blues, and Yankees still have to beat up on each other at least one more time.
Oh, Yankees and Sox have four.
Yep.
This weekend.
And I think
it's at Fenway.
I think so too.
Now Toronto's still ahead in that
division. Keep in mind, their path is not going to be easy either. I think they play tonight though. I think they play, who are they getting tonight? I saw it on the schedule. Is it the Reds?
But don't they have like a two or three game?
I think it's four. I think it's three and a half or four.
They play Pittsburgh.
They get the.
So they're going to have an easy time.
They should have a pretty good lead
unless the Yankees or Boston just.
Well, I have a feeling that the Red Sox, the Yankees, Blue Jays, and I think Rays will have something to say about who wins the AL East.
I don't know about the Rays.
Well, keep in mind, I think everybody still has to play each other at least one more time.
Yeah, they do.
So I don't think this AL East race is over by a long shot.
Yeah.
And if Mitch were here, I know he was happy over the weekend with the Dodgers sweeping the Padres.
Well, I'm sure he was.
To get the two game lead back in the, basically from one game back to two up again, but they still have to play each other down at San Diego, the final three next this coming weekend.
The Padres is the Dodgers' only threat right now, and that signal means our time is up.
We're out of time.
You have to cut it short. It was a fast hour, folks. Thank you very much for being with us. Mitch, we miss you. Let us know next week how your Alaskan cruise turned out. And Peter, hopefully you're doing okay as well. Thanks, everyone. Trish, Brad, everybody else. Take care. Go safe with God's abundant blessings, everybody. See you next week.